didn't have enough to do, so. All right. So today, I also attended operations, and operations talked about Lansing and the traffic calming they're doing on Lansing because it hooked into Mailey, right?
Okay, that's right.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. It's interesting stuff.
But I don't imagine Lansing would create that much traffic from Mailey.
Oh my God! According to, and I'm just going with the counselor actually. He's the one that said it was the 30% increase.
And it's okay.
Cut through traffic.
Yeah, we're expecting like 500% us if it happens here.
I'm sure you're the first stop.
Well, we're gonna have a lot more houses.
This meeting is being recorded.
All right. This meeting is being recorded by the host or the participant.
Got it.
Yep.
Hey, Richard. Nick, how are you?
Mr.
Peter.
How are you?
I recognize you at first.
Oh, listen. What can I say? But I see you put your glasses on.
Well, now I can see who it is.
Hi, Jocelyn. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Hanging in there for an old coot.
An old coot? Well, you're looking good for an old coot.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I know how old he is, too.
Yeah, so I'm
keeping a secret.
I know how old you are, too.
True.
I think we'd all agree that time flies, huh? Before you know it. Wow. Yes. Already 2 years of this nonsense, if you can believe that. 2 years. It was 2 years in March of this COVID nonsense. It's like it was a cloud.
Heavy going.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
But we're all well, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, we're hanging in there.
Yeah.
And spring is going to come in again. Come again.
If you look outside, it's raining.
I know.
Are you expecting your daffodils to pop up, or are you
crying? Oh, I'm expecting another snowstorm or two.
Oh, wow.
That's the guy from Tulloch.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's Kevin. How are you?
Good evening, everyone. Good, yourself?
While I've got you, could you send us your presentation, please?
Certainly, if I could do that maybe after the session, yeah, no problem at all.
I just thought about that, and actually, we'll proceed with that.
Sure. So thank you, everyone. It is 6:00. I do like to wait 5 minutes. That's why I said the presentation would start at 6:05, just to give people an opportunity to get their technology in order. So I'm going to be turning off my microphone and my video just for the next 5 minutes. And then at 6:05, I will have some introductory comments, speak to some of the particulars for the night in terms of how I certainly envision this discussion going. Hoping to keep order and make sure that everybody's voices can be heard and that the information that I'm hoping to provide tonight is clear and uninterrupted. But like I said, I'm going to be waiting until 6:05 just to give people the opportunity. So thank you for your patience.
What is our participation, Kevin? You have the numbers?
I had approximately 60 requests for the link.
Is that
60?
60, yes.
60, okay.
My screen is big enough.
Do you have a limit on how many people you can accommodate?
No? I don't believe so. I have the fancy version of Zoom, so I don't think there's a cap.
Oh, okay.
We have a 37 for me.
What a way of doing things, huh?
I couldn't agree more. I would much rather be able to see everybody face to face, just like I'm sure everybody else would like to. I'm just as sick of the last 2 years as I think you were discussing just before I jumped on.
Yeah, it's just, there's our new Green Party candidate, Dr. Robinson.
Dr. Robinson?
Congratulations, Mr. and Mrs. Congratulations are in order, I understand.
It's a successful marriage, yes. Thank you so much.
We hope our candidate, our I can't say it. I'm too tired. Our candidacy goes as well as our marriage.
There you go. Well, that's sort of fatalistic, don't you think?
Yeah, well, you've seen the Green Party, so maybe not.
Yeah. So what do you think of the truckers, Mr. Davidson? Dr. Davidson, I'd be very interested in knowing your opinion.
Is this a clean meeting or not?
Well, just we've got a couple of minutes.
I think everybody ought to be allowed to protest, and they've been given maybe more rope than they should have had. And nobody has the right to do the kind of destruction to the economy that you've seen at the Windsor Bridge. Nobody has that right, and nobody has the right to honk all night or block major thoroughfares in major cities. That's not part of the rules. So we know that there's a group that's manipulating this in behind, and we know that more than half of the money's coming out of the states. There's some very nasty politics packaged in this behind a perfectly legitimate protest.
Well, not legitimate.
Well, yeah, they aren't behaving in a legitimate manner once they've arrived. But everybody's sick of COVID. Unfortunately, COVID's not sick of us.
And what do you think?
What do I think? I'm here to listen to what everybody thinks.
I think
everybody has the right to protest. I agree with you, David. Not to the detriment of neighborhoods. But how do you do this? They did it peacefully. How do you do it and get this much attention and get this much resolve out of provincial governments without it?
So your view is they successfully bullied the provincial governments into speeding up, dropping the...
I don't agree with that.
No.
Yeah, well, it was going to happen anyway.
It was a matter of time. Well,
it might have made a few days difference, yes. I think that it's a big success for the right wing.
Yeah.
It's not much of a success for anything else.
Okay, so we can go on with this.
Anyway, off of that, I'm not here to talk about COVID or protesters.
Let's talk about something really interesting. Subdivisions. Rezoning. There we go. Meandering Montrose. Voila.
I've got one on behalf of Rainbow Roots. I was looking online, and it turns out there's an agency in BC that is helping health agencies do nature prescriptions. There's increasing research and evidence showing the benefits of being outdoors and trails and surrounded by nature. And most of that research is really coming out for mental health and for children, the importance of that for children. So this agency helps health professionals find ways to include that in the prescription that they're giving people. And on top of that, they're helping people do it for themselves. So that's really cool. That's really cool to see that progress being made. And it kind of ties to what we're talking about tonight later, right? So
yeah. Also, it's very timely because if you look at Lake Laurentian and the green space presentation that they did last Friday, I attended that. That Naomi and Franco did to the board. So there you go. It's unfortunate times, but possibly we've learned one thing out of all of this: people can grow hair. I have seen people with long hair. I've let mine grow, and it's just people that you thought we're going to keep it short. They've got long hair. So we're back to the 70s.
My wife has picked up a new skill in the last 2 years, cutting hair. Maybe on that light note, if I can maybe start is actually 6:07 now, so more than enough time hopefully for people to have figured out the technology here. So by way of introduction, my name is Kevin Jarvis. I am a senior planner at Tulloch Engineering. I am also a registered professional planner. And of course, Tulloch has been retained to assist Dalaran in making this application for a revised draft plan of subdivision and rezoning, which I will of course be speaking to tonight. And I certainly hope that we can have a productive and informative discussion on the specific application which is in front of us. Very quickly, before I jump into my relatively brief presentation, I'm hoping it'll be less than 15 minutes, certainly, just so that kind of everybody understands the way of things tonight and how we can make this run as smoothly as possible. As I had said in my invitation email, I will be asking at the end of the presentation, of course, for comments and questions. There is a function at the bottom of the screen, a button called Reactions. If you were to click that Reactions button at the bottom, there is a Raise Hand button. So when it comes time for comments and questions, I would ask everybody that's interested in making an oral comment or asking a question to click that Raise Hand, and then I will call upon you in some kind of order to provide your thoughts, comments, questions, and then I'm happy to address whatever I certainly can. Again, with within the scope of the application which has been made. To your 5 minutes, of course, I'm cutting you off right at the 5 minute mark, but if you could try to condense any comments or questions that you have within that time, just to ensure that everybody has the opportunity to speak. My HVAC system just came on, so hopefully I can hear you. And of course, if you could please keep your microphones muted. I believe I have a button to mute everybody, which I will be pressing every once in a while if there's a lot of background noise or feedback or what have you. And only to unmute your microphone if you could when you're called upon to speak. Also, as I said, this session is being recorded. That is purely for our own internal purposes, for note-taking, cross-referencing, making sure that we have all the right information from all the comments that are provided today. That recording will not be made public. That will remain an internal video recording. So without further ado, if I may, I'm going to be sharing my screen for the presentation. And again, so the session or the conversation that we're having today is to discuss the application which has been made over a portion of the Montrose subdivision lands, which are on the south side of the Hydro Corridor, of course, on the west side of Montrose Avenue. I'll be showing a number of plans and mapping which will show the extent of the planning application. But before I get into the actual application, which is subject to our discussion, I wanted to talk a little bit about the planning framework in the province of Ontario and how this application is reviewed, considered by staff of the city, and the scope and scale, you could say, of the decision which is going to be made by the city's planning committee and, of course, council once it does go to a public hearing at the city's planning committee. So the Planning Act is an overarching legislative or a piece of legislation in the province of Ontario that provides for the process through which applications for official plan amendments, rezonings, plans of subdivision, even site plan control applications must follow. There's a very prescribed process in the Planning Act. And very relevant to this specific application, there are a number of sections of the Act in terms of the roles, responsibilities, and means for appeal of an application such as this, which is, of course, a draft plan of subdivision application and rezoning. So there's a section of the Planning Act dealing with plans of subdivision, which is Section 51, and that section provides that approval authorities, which in this case, of course, is the City of Greater Sudbury, may extend approvals of draft plans of subdivision and can further extend extensions in perpetuity, you could say. An application must be made to the city to extend an existing draft plan approval, and certainly conditions of draft plan approval can be changed either through or during the request for that extension, or in fact at any time that the city deems fit. Conditions of draft plan approval could include a wide variety of considerations, but that might include everything from completing soils analysis to completing infrastructure design in terms of roads or pedestrian infrastructure, infrastructure capacity from a sewer and water perspective, making sure that there's enough pipe, room in pipes to service the new development which is proposed, or the revisions to the development plan which are proposed, and of course any survey plans or civil engineering plans that may be required to show that the proposed development is in fact appropriate. The Planning Act also allows for means of appeal of decisions, and that includes the ability to appeal decisions or non-decisions for either draft plan approvals and or rezoning applications. So a number of people can appeal a decision of city council on these kinds of applications. Those people include the applicant, public bodies or certain persons that are listed under the act, the minister, of course, and the municipality within which the plan is located. And then flowing down from the Planning Act, which again is more of a legislative process-oriented document, you could say, the Provincial Policy Statement, which is the overarching planning policy document for the province, sets out very high-level guidelines for what is considered good planning or how cities should grow. And that policy document or policy statement speaks to everything from healthy and livable communities to appropriate infrastructure to servicing to environmental considerations. Really the whole kit and caboodle of what is considered when a development proposal is brought forward. So specific to the subject lands for this application, which I have outlined here with generally with this red box of the star, specific to this application, the city's official plan provides further guidance from a policy perspective for making applications, again, for everything from your rezoning to draft plans and subdivision to site plans, etc. Specific to this property, the land subject to this application or subject to the subdivision are designated Living Area 1 and Parks and Open Space in the city's official plan. Now, the Living Area 1 designation is generally the area where residential development is to be directed or oriented. It's the areas which are very largely residentially oriented, supposed to accommodate residential communities and a variety of built forms. And that could be everything from your typical single detached house to semis, row houses, townhouses, to even your, of course, your higher intensity kinds of developments, which might include everything from a 2 to 20 story multiple dwelling. So the Living Area 1 area, which is the yellow within this box, is areas where residential development is to be directed. As I said, there is a parks and open space designation over the subject lands, which applies only to the hydro corridor. So that's to say that the city's official plan, which directs where development should occur and where public open space or parks and open space should be oriented, the official plan has directed that residential development should be in this general area shown in the red, and then that green linear corridor to the north is certainly designated parks and open space, and that is the area in which parks and open space are to be directed. There's also a component of parks and open space designation to the north of the hydro corridor. You can see that in the green area shown here. This is Montrose as it currently terminates, and then of course the Montrose extension would continue to the north from this terminus here. This parks and open space area is certainly not subject to the existing application which we are speaking to today, and that's because the geographic boundaries of where an application is being made very much limits the discussion or limits the consideration of an application to only those lands upon which an application has been made. And I think that will be a little bit more clear when I go into some of the specific lands. So the current draft plan and rezoning application, which we're discussing today, was submitted to the City of Greater Sudbury in August of 2021. That would include approximately 0.6 hectares adjacent to the Montrose right-of-way, which that 0.6 hectares is shown in this red box, which this is the former lands, or this is the lands that are currently zoned what's called an R3-1D38. And R3-1D38 means medium-density residential zoning, with a density allowance of 38 units per hectare are currently permitted in the zoning in this red boxed area here. Approximately 5.44 hectares, so 5 lots, which are currently permitted and are draft approved currently, are also being proposed for rezoning from an R1-5, which only allows for single detached residential uses, to an R2-2 zone, which would allow for, in addition to single detached, also semi-detached built form. Nothing beyond singles or semis is contemplated over those lands, which again is generally in this area along Montrose, and then a couple of lots in the back along Forest Hill. So a little bit of history around the Montrose subdivision, or the extent of Montrose, which is subject to, again, this application. In 1976, which was before I was born, I'll be fully transparent, the original iteration, you could say, of this component of the Montrose area was in fact registered on title. So there is an existing M-Plan M1044, which is, you could say, solidified permission for the development of residential lots as shown on this M-Plan. And I'm not going to get into the particulars of that M-Plan because, of course, things have changed and evolved over the last 30 or almost 40 years on this site. The lands to the north of the Hydro Corridor were also registered shortly thereafter, just a couple of months after, also in 1976. So the lot fabric that you see on this plan is registered on title and is currently permitted to occur. Then in 1990, jumping forward about 16 years, a new plan was presented and was approved by the Regional Council. So that plan allowed for approximately 450 units with a range of building types ranging from singles and semis to a block, again, allowing for multiple dwelling, which would be an apartment building kind of style of build. Over both the southerly lands, which are subject to the current application, and the lands to the north of the Hydro Corridor. And you can see that lot fabric that was proposed in 1990. Then in 2007, 17 years later, an application was made to revise the lot fabric that was approved in 1990. And the scale and scope of that 2007 amendment only touched Forestdale Road and changed the alignment of that road to what you see on the right side of the screen here. So comparing the left to the right, you can see here at Forestdale comes down, there's this cul-de-sac and the extension of Forestdale coming from just to the west of that cul-de-sac. In 2007, that cul-de-sac was removed and more of a direct connection from the north side of the Hydro Corridor down to the existing Forestdale, which is here, was approved. Going further forward, in 2011, there was another amendment which was requested and approved, which relocated that block of multiple dwellings from just a little bit north from this location, which is, you could say, in the middle of some residential lots, not on a corner lot, to where it is shown here. It's a little bit tricky to see, my apologies, but this is the new location of that block, whereas previously it was in fact around this area. So just move to the south by 3 or 4 lots or so, you could say. No additional allowance for residential units was provided through that decision. And then from 2011 to 2019, the only formal application that was made was a request to extend the draft approval of the subdivision iteration as it's shown here. Of course, because the subdivision was not registered by 2019. So if you don't register your lots and if you're not under construction, then you have to ask for that extension every 3 years. So in 2019, the proponent requested that extension and it was granted. Of course, that 2019 extension does now lapse in 2022, which is certainly part of the reason that we are here tonight. But in addition to the extension, which is now required by April of this year, so just a couple of months, the property owner has, of course, proposed some revisions to the lot fabric and to the zoning on the south portion of this component of Montrose. So only to the lands which are to the south of the hydro corridor and only to those lands which are to the west of Montrose. The scale of the revisions which are being asked for now include changing that multiple dwelling block that I was speaking to before from the R3-1 with the density allowance of 38 units per hectare, converting that zoning to only an R2-2 zone, so that only semi-detached dwelling units could be built, or single-detached, on that extent of where the block was previously proposed. And as I spoke to earlier, the other components of the rezoning ask, which is currently subject, is the rezoning of the R15 lots, 5 of them, to the R22 to allow for semi-detached. Now, how does this impact the density allowance or the number of units that are permitted in this area? And I'll get into the changes to the lot fabric in a moment, but how does the zoning change impact the current permissions? So currently, the draft approval allows for 98 lots. That's split between 5 lots that are R1-5, so only allow single detached, and 93 lots, which are currently zoned R22. That would allow for up to 186 semi-detached units. In addition, that one medium density multiple dwelling block, which is being rezoned, would permit 21 dwelling units. So 186 plus 21. I have it on the next screen, but I'm going to 21 allows for 207 across those three components, you could say, of the development. Now, the revised lot fabric and that change in zoning would result in the reduction, in fact, of the number of lots that are permitted on this extent of land from that prior 98 lots down to 92 lots, which would permit up to 184 semi-detached units from the prior 212 units that were permitted. Also, the lot fabric is being changed such that from that prior draft plan approval, now there are 2 blocks. This is the prior draft plan approval, correct? Now there are 2 blocks proposed along the hydro corridor for parks and open space and stormwater management facilities. Those are blocks 93 and 94 on this plan. And as I had said, the extension of the existing draft plan approval, which is this iteration, does lapse in April of this year. So you can see, of course, that there are changes to the lot fabric. Forestdale Road is not proposed to be changed whatsoever from a delineation perspective. So where Forestdale Road was previously permitted and approved through draft plan approval, that delineation is not subject to change through this application. Of course, the crescent, which was previously proposed along with the cul-de-sac, which is shown in this darker gray, we did our best to try to do this overlay as as clearly as possible. It's a little bit confusing, but hopefully I can walk everyone through it. This prior approved gray road, which would be, again, a crescent with that cul-de-sac, is now proposed to have a Street A, which is to be named, extending from the east side of Woodbine through the subject lands out to Forestdale Drive, while also providing this Street B, if everyone's following where my mouse is, which would be another crescent coming off of that extension of Woodbine. So again, the application, which is subject to a decision by council and has been applied for under the Planning Act, is purely to change the lot fabric from the prior draft plan approval and to change some relatively scoped, I would say, zoning particulars on the site to allow for a reduction in the number of units that would in fact be permitted, and what the proponent believes to be provides a more functional logical road layout, lot layout, and internal circulation design for, again, just the extent of the lands which are shown on the screen currently. So again, the intent of this application is purely to reduce the number of lots from 92 from the prior approved 98, to make that lot fabric a little bit more regular, because if I can be honest, this prior iteration, you can certainly see along Forestdale Drive, there are a number of lots, especially on the east side of Forestdale, that are quite long, skinny, do not provide for maybe some of the privacy that these owners may desire. And the new iteration provides for more regular lot fabric, a more logical internal circulation, allowing for those residents to the north of the hydro corridor, when of course that extent of land is developed, to potentially use Forestdale and come out through this new Street A out to Woodbine and then onto Montrose to go either north or south. And it is the hope, of course, that providing this new, I'll call it spine road, Street A, the extension of Woodbine, may in fact mitigate or reduce the number of residents or future residents to the north of the hydro corridor who would be using Forestdale and then traveling along the existing built-up area where I'm sure many of you live currently on Forestdale, would allow those residents to the north of the hydro corridor to bypass Cassandra, Ivydale, Gardenvale, and all of those existing residents along the southern portion of Forestdale, so that they can come out to Montrose and or Woodbine in a more efficient manner. So with that, I think that was a bit more than 15 minutes. That was almost 20 minutes or so. Not too bad, but I would like to open the floor to comments and questions, of course, at this point. I hope that was relatively clear, and I hope that the scope and scale and the intent of the Planning Act application, which is in front of staff right now for consideration, and will be going to the Planning Committee for discussion and rendering a decision, was relatively clear. But I'd like to have these two plans on the screen just as we hear your comments and questions, so that we can certainly refer back to it. And so that given that was a lot of information that I just provided, of course you can look at these plans and compare as we discuss going forward. Also, though, before I open the floor to questions or comments, of course, we have Councillor Jocelyn Landry-Altman on the call with us today. I'm just trying to get it so that I can actually see everybody's faces again. My apologies. Technology is fun. We have Councillor Jocelyn Landry-Altman on the call today. I wondered if she wanted to provide any words at this point, or if we should just open the floor. So that's entirely up to you, of course. And you are on mute.
Thank you for the invitation, Kevin, but I'm here to listen.
Thank you very much. Not a problem at all. So again, I'm just trying to figure out how I can make sure that I can see everybody's faces. There we are. That works. Okay. And again, to remind everybody, there is that button at the bottom of the screen that allows for you to raise your hand. So if there's anybody at this point that has questions or comments, very much looking forward to hearing your thoughts. We are going to be taking detailed notes on what is said today. And then, of course, I will be going back to the proponent to discuss the concerns and take any action that is possible here. So I'm just, I don't see any hands. Oh, there we are. So I see a Derek Koziel. My apologies if I'm not pronouncing that correctly, but maybe Derek, if you could start us off. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Nailed it on the name.
Great.
So let me preface my question with just a note. So I live on Montrose, and I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. So what affects traffic on Montrose is quite important to me because of that, more so than it would be if I didn't. So I have two questions, Kevin. The first one, if I could ask it, and then you could answer, and then if I could follow up. It's a very brief follow-up, but it depends on your first answer.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Excuse me, sorry. So I think I know what your answer is going to be, but my questions, I'll explain why I think my question's within the scope of this discussion. So the first item is that this new, this area that is subject to the rezoning application has a cause and effect on Montrose, right? It's immediately adjacent to it. So the area of rezoning is a portion of the Nickeldale subdivision, right? And the overall Nickeldale subdivision abuts and constrains Montrose, from what I have gathered. And this application further restricts Montrose because it is on the immediate west side of it in its current alignment of the lot fabric. And there's a council resolution that requires Montrose to meander, right? And that's there's also that concept required within the new draft transportation study. So my first question is, why does this application not include meandering or work towards meandering, when there's clear direction from council that that's required for Montrose's future?
So thank you for the question. I'll do my best to answer on a high level. I understand that there is a lot of history around the meandering of Montrose. And I'll be the first to admit that I am not, in fact, an expert when it comes to that history. I think a lot of people on this call are going to be more expert than even myself. I have not been involved with the Montrose extension since its first iterations, or its new iterations in the 1990s and the 2000s. What I can say about the Montrose extension and the question around the meandering is the delineation of Montrose as it's shown on this plan is in fact already in the ownership of the city. The city has ownership of the lands for Montrose Avenue, right? And I believe there's some debate, I'll use that word, at the city as to whether or not meandering is the best planning outcome and the best outcome for the municipality from a cost and operations and efficiency of infrastructure, all sorts of considerations that certainly traffic engineers and planners have to consider when they're designing and reviewing applications or building communities. But again, Montrose is owned by the city currently, which means that the right of way that the proponent, Dalaran, of course, has to be cognizant of in making any application must align with the current trajectory of the Montrose right away. So because that infrastructure corridor is in the city's ownership, Dalaran must make sure that their plans integrate with that existing delineation, right? I also I understand that the vast majority of the discussion, if not the discussion itself around the meandering of Montrose, is very largely north of the hydro corridor. Now, that's not to say that this community isn't part of that discussion. Of course, anybody that lives in the area, has to use these roads daily, multiple times a day or what have you, of course has, if I can use the term, skin in the game around the meandering of Montrose. But because, again, the Montrose right-of-way is city-owned and there's ongoing discussion at the city regarding the appropriateness of the meandering versus whether it should be a straight shot up, if I can put it that way, up to Mailey Drive, and the considerations on both sides of that discussion that are being debated at the city right now, in fact, through the Transportation Master Plan and other studies that have been commissioned by the city itself, means that given the city owns this trajectory of the right-of-way where the lots are, or where the proposed roads, as shown on the screen now, must intersect with, Dalron, as the proponent, has to make any proposals or applications cognizant of that existing corridor, right? So that is why this plan only deals with the lot fabric to the west of the Montrose right-of-way and does not look at the actual right-of-way of Montrose, because that is city-owned land.
Okay, I understood. And so when you're saying city-owned land, and Christy put a note in there about a portion or most of it being built, are you talking about the immediate portion of the right-of-way that abuts the land under discussion? Or
exactly.
Are you talking about the entirety of the right-of-way up to Mailey Drive, essentially, north of the corridor?
I believe the entire corridor is, in fact, owned by the city. But I am only speaking to that component of Montrose which abuts the subject application. And that's very important because, again, subject application under the Planning Act here only speaks to the geographic extent south of the hydro corridor and to the west of that existing right-of-way. Right. So...
Okay. No, I got her. Thank you. So the second follow-up question now is that 2011 amendment that you have up on the screen there, the one that is due for extension, could you confirm what the boundary of that plan is that is due for extension? And does that include, basically, what portions of Montrose does that include?
Sorry, you cut out there a little bit.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So the plan that you have up there, perfect. Yeah. I'm wondering, so that's the 2011 plan that's up for extension, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So what is the boundary of that plan that's up for extension? And basically, I'm wondering how much of Montrose is included within that plan that's under review for extension.
So my understanding is the 2011 revisions, I believe that they were only... subject to the lands that are under discussion today. And when, regardless of the extent of a 2011 extension, the immediate application for the revisions to that draft approved plan from 2011 are only covering those lands south of the corridor. So it's a bit of an eccentricity when it comes to the Planning Act. You can make an application for draft plan approval over whatever extent of subdivision that you wish. And then you're right, the full extent of that approved 2011 plan must be extended, but the revision, but a proponent can make an application for just a further smaller extent of that draft plan approval to be further revised, right, or further changed. So the application, which is going to council and committee for decision here, is the extension of that extent that was draft approved in 2011 and then extended in 2019, but the revisions to the plan that are going to be considered are only for the portion of that prior approval south of the corridor. So that's why I say the subject application, the subject rezoning, and the subject revisions to the draft plan are only scoped to, and those changes only include those lands in South.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. My second question is clearly out of the scope of those lands. It's more, you mentioned it, so I was wondering. Thank you.
Thank you. I see Dennis directly to the right of you on my screen. So Dennis, my apologies. There's no last name, but I hope you can hear me, and you have the floor.
Testing.
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you.
Okay, good. Thanks, Kevin. Dennis Delaplac, last name. So, Kevin, when you design your plan of subdivision like this, do you require some form of traffic studies? Or do you have to make decisions or recommendations regarding transportation safety issues that you might see in the plan?
Yeah, I'm happy to answer that question before we move on with your comments. I understand that this application for revised draft plan of subdivision and rezoning did not require a traffic impact study by city staff, and that's largely owing to, again, the scope and scale of the proposed revisions. And I would suspect, I was not part of the discussions at that time through pre-consultation when the required studies for an application are set out by city staff. But I would certainly suspect that given the reduction in the number of units that this rezoning would facilitate, that staff would say there would be no impact to the local transportation system because the actual number of vehicles would be reduced. So no traffic impact study was required.
Okay. So basically what you said was that Delran has to abide by the established route for Montrose. And the established route for Montrose as it stands right now leads to a direct connection to Millie Drive. Right.
Well, the current application that we're discussing today has to be cognizant of the right of way because absolutely it is in the city's ownership. And like was said before, a large portion of the road is in fact built now.
Yeah. So it does do a direct connection to Maley Drive. Now, our current transportation study is still the 2005 transportation study. And in that study, it warns the city that if the Montrose extension connects to Millie Drive, as is planned right now, that there's a very good chance that there's going to be a lot of traffic going through our subdivision, which will cause a lot of damage. That's pretty well known by a lot of people now. Have you taken that into consideration when you designed this plan, considering that the that very busy Montrose is adjoining your plan of subdivision?
Sorry, I like to think before I respond to questions, of course. I would respond to that in saying that the consideration of the meandering versus the non-meandering was not really part of the consideration here, owing to the fact that, again, given the geographic area that's being considered here, and given the fact that the extent of Montrose, which is abutting this area, is already defined and under construction and is a known design, I would maybe I'll pose a question back if I could. Given that this application is only looking at the interior lot fabric for the extent of land with, and the use permissions through that zoning, I'm not sure how an application for revised interior lot fabric and the density allowances through the rezoning would consider the future meandering or non-meandering of Montrose, right? And I think what you're alluding to perhaps is if it is built or designed or what have you as a straight shot straight up to Maley Drive, there's a concern that that would increase obviously the amount of traffic using it as a thoroughfare or a shortcut or whatever term you want to use up to Maley Drive. But again,
can I make a suggestion here, Dennis? There's no way that Kevin actually has been responsible for this. The city. A council talked about a meander. The traffic people opposed it. They have, since the development's been going ahead, allowed or encouraged the road to align in the way they originally wanted it, ignoring the meander. And Kevin shouldn't be held accountable for it because he was just given work something out within the framework that we have on the ground right now.
That's not what I'm getting at.
So I appreciate that.
You comment. Should just be clear that he's not making this decision. What you're worried about is what the traffic engineers have been doing in the background and continue to do because they continue to be committed to the connection directly through. That's what you're worried about. Kevin's just...
That's not where I'm at.
If I can take a pause
That's not where I'm heading.
Mr. DeLaplace, I'm happy to let you continue your questions and hopefully I can provide some answers.
Well,
I appreciate Dr. Rockman's insights there, but what I would ask is that perhaps let me respond to the questions. Not a problem, Doctor. I appreciate your insights, absolutely. But Mr. DeLaplante, I would actually say that Dr. Robinson's kind of an analysis in terms of the responsibility around the question of meander is in fact correct.
But
with that said, absolutely, please continue.
Actually, it is wrong.
You're not letting me finish my question. You're all off point. My question has nothing to do with what you're talking about. If you let me finish my question, then you can answer it, Kevin.
Please continue.
Okay, so Montrose, now that we know, will, according to this plan, connect directly to Mailey Drive, will have a fair amount of traffic. Montrose, technically speaking, is still designated an arterial roadway. You have 6 lots in your plan that are facing an arterial roadway. And I find that that's not normally the way things are done when you're doing a plan of subdivision along an arterial roadway. You've got Lansing, the north end, all the lots are back facing. And then you've got some on Woodbine across from the college. Newer subdivisions, they don't seem to allow the residences to face a busy arterial roadway. So I was just wondering if you had planned a subdivision with Montrose being as an arterial or a collector roadway. That's my question.
It's a good question. The way that I can respond to that certainly would be regardless of how Montrose is designed and built to the north of the hydro corridor. The proponent is comfortable and satisfied that the revisions to the lot fabric along Montrose removing that apartment block is appropriate.
But what about the 6 residential lots that are facing Montrose?
Yes, the applicant is certainly satisfied, like I said, that those 6 lots that you're speaking to are appropriate regardless of how Montrose is designed and built in the future to the north.
And regardless of the designation?
Which designation?
Well, Montrose is designated arterial.
Arterial versus collector or what have you, yes. And that very much kind of carries on, I would say, the pattern of other lot fabric to the south of this subdivision, where other lots, residential lots, are in fact fronting also along Montrose. So with that, that would be the 5 minutes. I would certainly encourage you, if you have other questions or comments, to get in touch with me directly, and I'm happy to pass that on to the proponent. Councillor Landry-Altman, I believe you may have had some insights to provide.
No, I continue to listen. Thank
okay.
you.
Very good. Not a problem. And like I said, there is a significant amount of a history and consideration for the meandering versus the non-meandering to the north. There are, as I was alluding to before, I believe internal discussions at the city regarding whether that should be a meandering or whether it should be a straight shot.
Let me cut to the chase. A motion was passed. There's a transportation study, the master plan, and there's recommendations. There's 3 recommendations that are being considered. So with that being said, I think that pretty well cuts to the chase. It's not it's not as cut and dried as you make it out to be, but then you're not a traffic engineer, as you admitted yourself. But thank
exactly right, and you're exactly right. There's a number of considerations, like I was saying, which have to be balanced by the experts. So thank you for those comments. Don Bore.
Okay, it's thank Nick you. Actually will be asking the question. We're sharing the same computer.
Very good.
I'm not going to ask any questions. I'm going to make some comments, if that's appropriate to you.
Certainly.
Regarding, okay. Our chief concern with this Dowlam plan is that it does not seem to be in keeping with one of the sales pitches and information upon which my wife and I based our decision to purchase one of the Dowlam condominiums in the Villages of Montrose complex in 2014. We were advised through a Dowlam sales brochure, and I'm going to show you that brochure right here. We were advised that our new complex sits nestled among some of the best walking and hiking trails in Sudbury, created in part by both the NDCA, that's the Nickel District Conservation Authority, and Dowlam, as well as other interested parties. And this is the case, as a number of our complex residents enjoy almost daily walks and hikes through the many trails and paths in the area in which the Dowlam plan is proposed to be located. We and many other area residents are not in opposition to development in the area in question. We are hopefully influencing ways to make it better for our community, our city, and a developer in the areas of land use, developing appropriate green areas, and avoiding what could become a tenement type of community with all the things that, you know, would involve that. The original Dowlam 2014 concept plan, this one, was received enthusiastically by area residents, the city, and the developer incorporated much of the above ideas and could be improved upon by incorporating climate change needs and concepts that could enhance the lives of the present and future residents. The present Dowlam proposal does not appear to reflect a plan that would preserve the ecological areas for future residents. For example, hundreds, if not thousands, of 15 to 25-year-old red and white pine trees would be bulldozed to the ground, and this act is not something we in Sudbury especially need. We, as well as the city staff and councillors, are well aware that the developer has built substantially large communities, which no doubt have resulted in large tax gains for the city. And the developer is held in high regard by the city as a result. However, city government, staff, and councillors are not in place only as guardians of the public purse, but to plan and to enact these plans that would make our city a better place, a healthier place, and a safer place in which to live. In terms of plans, any new plan by the developer and planning must maintain the concept of the meandering of Montrose Ave, which we in the Villages of Montrose consider a done deal by directive of council to staff in December 2016, city staff notwithstanding. In short, what we're asking for is a return to the Villages of Montrose plan 2014-2015 with tweaks necessitated by today's world and in keeping with health and ecological factors for our community. It is to be hoped that future meetings on this subject, if the public is to be invited, are in-person meetings, not limited to residents within 120 meters, but open to all who have been using and enjoying the Nickeldale Trail for years. Also, as many interested parties are senior citizens who, like me, are technologically deficient, please avoid the use of Zoom, please. I hope that my friend Don can continue within our 5 minutes.
That's it. I think Dick is done. Did you want to respond to Dick before I do my little question?
No, please continue. I believe.
Okay. My only concern is the fact that without infrastructure in place, I've estimated that if 192 semis are built, it'll bring close to 800 people, probably 500 cars, numerous school buses to come and pick up the kids, no place set aside for kids to play other than the street. And my personal experience being it's such a large area with semis, which is probably the largest concentration of semis in Surrey that I'm aware of, would bring also a lot of cars on the street, which would mean that kids have no other place to play than on the street themselves. So that's a major concern with the fact that adding piggyback into what Dick has said, by removing all the trails and places and to play with, I'm envisioning a major problem down the road that this is too condensed for the area that is being proposed. Thank you.
I appreciate your comments tonight. Thank you. So if I may, maybe I see Kathy Browning's hand up.
Yeah. What I was wondering was, well, first of all, I understand that council, city council voted in favor of reducing the carbon footprint in Sudbury. So why take down trees and destroy green space? And here I'm talking and tagging on the last speakers about the green space that starts at Montrose, behind Gardenvale, Ivydale, Cassandra, et cetera, and moves across. There's a really nice forested area there, and it's used extensively by residents who have developed a network of trails for hiking, biking, snowshoeing, cross-country skiing, and walking dogs. And frankly, to say that there's parks and open spaces under the hydro lines, there's a lot of studies have been done on the impact, the negative impact on people's health from walking under hydro lines. So why take down this really nice green space and overdevelop an area and tagging into what the last people were told, because they were told something different. So that's the first thing that I would like to know. I know this has been in the works for some time, but it's just, it takes down the quality of life for all of the residents living in the area and of their properties in particular. So I'd like to know that, and then I'd like to ask another question once I heard your response to that.
Absolutely. Thank you for the question. It's a good question. And I hear these kinds of concerns very often in my work in facilitating talking about development. It's certainly appreciated that green space or areas that are treed or are naturally vegetated or what have you are assets to communities. But remember, at the beginning of my presentation, I was speaking to the planning framework in the province of Ontario in terms of the Planning Act, the provincial policy statement, and the official plan for the city. And I think maybe I'll speak a little bit to the provincial policy statement and how that overarching policy document deals with green spaces or with natural features is what they're called in the provincial policy statement. So the PPS, so I'm going to call the provincial policy statement the PPS, has certainly a section around protecting natural heritage features. And it defines natural heritage features in a number of ways in terms of the types of features or things on the ground that should be looked at and potentially preserved or protected because of the importance of those features. And that would include everything from significant wildlife habitat for endangered and threatened species, or those species that are subject to the Endangered Species Act. It speaks to different levels of protection and things that you have to consider when you're looking at developing close to wetlands or provincially significant wetlands. And there's a number of other kinds of features that are spoken to in the provincial policy statement. For better or for worse, the reality of the provincial policy statement is that it does not protect those areas that are just well-treed. There has to be some kind of significant feature which is defined and identified through the provincial policy statement in order for that natural area to be protected in some way from development, right? And like I said, I hear this quite often that, you know, a well-treed area is an asset to a community, and I couldn't agree more. I like forested areas, I go out for hikes, and I like trails just as much as the next person, of course. But when a development is proposed, it has to be only cognizant of those features that are protected through the provincial policy statement. And it has to protect those features in a manner as prescribed or described in the official plan itself. So I believe one of the prior speakers had alluded to very large pine trees of some kind. I'm not an ecologist, of course. But large, significant trees that are certainly mature and are aesthetically significant. Again, though, the provincial policy statement does not recognize only treed areas or naturally vegetated areas. There has to be a feature on a site that is deserving or provided some kind of protection under the provincial policy statement. So that is why development is proposed in this treed area. It is pursuant to the planning policy framework within Ontario.
What about reducing the carbon footprint in relationship to now destroying yet another green space in Sudbury?
Yeah, that's a good question. I know from a scientific perspective, absolutely, the retention of trees does help to combat climate change. I mean, you plant trees, of course, to offset carbon emissions and to clean the air. All those great things that we should be doing more. But in terms of the implementation of the provincial policy statement, the environmental features that have to be protected are identified relatively explicitly. And certainly the provincial policy statement does have sections, especially now since some relatively recent changes over the last, I'll say, 5 years or so, whereby climate change is in fact now considered in planning decisions and when proponents formulate planning applications. But the scope and scale of how the provincial policy statement addresses climate change is very much scoped to only discussion around changing forms of mobility in terms of public transit, the provision of walkable communities, walking infrastructure, designing communities such that carbon emissions are reduced. The natural heritage features section of the PPS does not tie the protection of non-significant features as defined in the PPS to the climate change policies themselves. So because there's no direct policy connection in policy guidance documents, the removal of trees alone does not, I suppose you could say, it's not considered to be something which is detrimental to the climate change policies, which are also found in the provincial policy statement.
So when do you plan to start building? And when do you plan on starting to build?
Good question. Of course, like I said, the extent of Montrose, which is abutting these lands, are certainly under construction right now. I would imagine that the proponent would be looking to start construction of the interior roads that are not under construction currently. As soon as they have approvals and as soon as the market demands. I have to admit, I do not know the timeline for construction for these subdivisions. That is very much, I think, dependent on certainly the discussion that we're having tonight, the discussion around the planning committee table, which will be happening in the next few months whenever a hearing is scheduled. But I do know that the proponent is certainly looking to get this underway as soon as permission allows. So with that, perhaps I will call upon the next individual. I really
Kevin,
appreciate the comments.
May I please speak next?
Certainly. Kaylin, I don't see a hand up, but not a problem. You have a time restriction. So yes, please.
So I have a couple comments I just wanted to share. I am all for more housing. I'd like to keep as much green space as possible. If there's a way we can keep the Nickeldale Trail right now, that'd be wonderful. But as I know in my own neighborhood right now, housing is extremely expensive, and even semis are very, very expensive to purchase. So I am all for more housing, and even to keep the R3-1.D38 zoning. As somebody with a young family, both my husband and I work, and we both have good jobs. We're both university educated, but it's still a challenge to purchase housing right now in Sudbury. Just want to put that out there, that more housing would be better for people like me and my family. And more green space. Thank you. That's all I wanted to say.
I really appreciate those comments, Caleb. Dr. Robinson, you've been waiting patiently with your hand up. Perhaps I will give you the floor. Thank you.
I don't have much to say at this point. I recognize that you're really describing a plan and making it clear the limitations of the Planning Act. The primary way that something might happen is if council were to negotiate with the developer for the trail, the Nickeldale Trail as we've called it, and other features. And in general, the reason council might do that is because it would increase tax revenues for the entire area. It would improve the quality of life, obviously. But council might well have to make some concessions on density or other features to the developer. I recognize that you're not actually in a position to discuss any of those things, so there's not really much I need to say here. Council needs to understand its opportunity, and it does mean going into some sort of bargaining arrangement, as I'd understand it.
Certainly appreciate those comments, Doctor. Thank you very much. I see N's iPad has also had their hands up quite a long time. I'm sorry that I had to refer to you as the N's iPad, but you have the floor. Thank you for coming tonight. Just a second call out. The individual who has their hand up, the name N's iPad. If you can hear me, please take yourself off mute if you're not on mute. Oh, and I think they might have actually just disappeared. So okay, perhaps I will move on. I see Tony has your hand up. Thank you for coming tonight, Tony. You have the floor.
Hi. I missed the presentation, so I'm kind of... So if you already spoke about this, then I apologize. But my question is... I know all new city development requires sidewalk and all that stuff. Now, will you look at adding some on Forestdale, like what's already built? Because going up and down that hill, especially during winter, and if there's going to be a lot more cars, that would make me feel uncomfortable. It's kind of more of a comment, I guess, just because there's a lot of people that use this hill to exercise during the summer. And obviously safety would be number one. And if there's going to be a lot more traffic, then that's something that I think should be looked at.
I appreciate the question. I can answer relatively directly in the sense that no sidewalks are proposed for the current extent of Forestdale, purely owing to the fact that that area is not within, in fact, the control of the proponent of this new revised draft plan. The existing Forestdale area, which is built up currently, is that right away is in the city's ownership. The city has its own roles and responsibilities in terms of any kind of infrastructure improvements or modifications in terms of adding sidewalks or what have you to that existing extent of city-owned land. So no, this application would not
for better or for worse, include any kind of sidewalk on the existing Forest Hill. But I appreciate you coming out.
Yeah, sorry, I just kind of want to have a follow-up.
Sure.
So, because there will be new sidewalk on the current Forest Hill, right? The one that's proposed.
I would certainly fathom that city staff would be requiring such.
Okay, so then it's just going to randomly stop and then, okay, thank you. That was just my question, thank you.
Thank you. I see Forest Hill family has their hand up.
I'm just going to echo two of the comments that were made in the chat and one that I submitted in writing and I've not yet received a response to with regards to the end of Forest Hill Drive and turning that into a cul-de-sac at the end that would be in line with the rest of development rather than trying to extend that into a separate division. I think that would address the concerns that the previous speaker had. And the comment, there's three of the comments that were said in the chat already on this item. For anybody who's visited the area, it's a series of cul-de-sac neighborhoods, a substantial hill that's dangerous in the winter to begin with coming down. I fail to understand, Kevin, how even a drive through this area, that this would be the best way forward for you here with that extra extension. Maybe you can shed some light on why a cul-de-sac at past Cassandra, and then where you've extended into Forest Hill Drive. Why not put another cul-de-sac at the top there? You've got a whole bunch of cul-de-sacs. Why would you try to connect that? Maybe I just, it's very, very surprising and would really appreciate responses to our answers.
Certainly, thank you for the question. So I believe some of the past plans and iterations of the plan that I had shown earlier in the presentation, and I am going to be sending my presentation to all of the participants, that's not a problem at all. May shed some light in terms of the trajectory, you could say, of Forest Hill or the evolution of Forest Hill Drive. So the application, which is being discussed now and will be again going to Plan Committee and Council, does not change the delineation of Forest Hill Drive. Forest Hill Drive has been proposed as a direct a connection to the existing Forest Hill built-up area since it was approved by council, since the revisions to the plan were approved by council, and I want to make sure I get my dates right here, in 2007, when you can see again, as we had discussed, the original plan showed still a connection from Forest Hill coming out, so a direct connection, not cul-de-sac and Forest Hill, but change that alignment to what you see on the right side of the screen here, which is the existing draft approved delineation for Forest Hill, and that existing draft approved design has not changed through the application which is currently before us. So that is why Forest Hill has not been looked at in terms of cul-de-sac. The proponent is looking to maintain, you could say, the status quo for what is currently approved for Forest Hill.
So on the item that you just shared, there was at the end of the road that you're showcasing now, had a cul-de-sac. So on the one on the left here, proposed sketch R1, do you think that meandering version of the road there would likely result in less intense traffic than the one that's currently being proposed?
Yeah, and that's a good question. Now, I can speak to that very briefly. Planning, modern planning or modern community building always looks at connectivity and wanting to ensure good circulation and good connections interior to subdivisions to allow for easy circulation interior to the subdivision and also out to, of course, your collector and your arterial roads. So I would certainly suspect, and this is very, I'll say, hypothetical because there is no cul-de-sac currently permitted on that side. It's approved currently for the thoroughfare. But planning does look at that kind of consideration, making sure that the roads have connectivity, that there's an easy flow of traffic interior to sites out to those collector roads that are supposed to collect, you know, your larger or higher intensity of vehicles. And also another reason that planning practice generally discourages, in fact, the creation of cul-de-sacs, and certainly especially cul-de-sacs that would be very long and dead-ending, as it would be if this connection was to be cul-de-sac, is operationally for municipalities after the cul-de-sacs are often built, long cul-de-sacs often introduce operational issues for the city in terms of snow plowing, clearing snow, and the ability to have snow storage at the end of cul-de-sacs, to allow for as efficient operational and or as efficient maintenance and operations as possible from the city's perspective once they assume the roadway. I would suspect, although this hasn't discussion with staff hasn't been had formally on this certainly, but I would certainly suspect that the city may have concerns around having a cul-de-sac of that kind of length from an operational perspective. I appreciate those comments, and we have of course made note of the idea of cul-de-sacking for sale. Patch, I see your hand is up. Perhaps just unmute yourself. Yeah, great. And you have the floor. Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you, Kevin, for putting this on. I'd like to begin with one statement, and that is that doing a census of the community, the surrounding community, we find this plan quite inappropriate. Now, we've noticed that this plan has gone through several iterations of its interior lot fabric. So any further considerations of the lot fabric shifting or changing, is that something that the developer is still amenable to? That's my first question to you.
Sorry, I'm just checking if I'm unmuted or not. I would certainly say that if there was no opportunity for at least discussion and consideration of alternative ideas, that we would not be having this discussion tonight.
So you're saying that this plan here, as presented, this redraft, is still possibly to be changed?
There's always opportunity until a decision is rendered to make revisions to applications, certainly.
Okay, and what?
But I will say that the application as it is presented now is as is shown on the screen. Yes.
Yes, it is. Yes, and we see what's being presented, but we also find that what was presented in 2014 as the Villages of Montrose conceptual master plan was also brought forward to the community to get feedback like this, and the community actually, through a black ballot box by Delron, approved that plan 86%. So the question is, that was feedback over many, many, many months by CARB and the community. And that led to a revision of the site fabric. Now we're back at another plan, because that site fabric, which Delron presented, which included trails, which included the meandering for Montrose, that was somehow not put forward, even though, if you look at a Sudbury Star article from 2015, and you can Google Delron unveils new Sudbury subdivision, in that article, it is referencing, no doubt, obviously, this master plan that was presented to the community. And then we have this coming out and slapping onto the desk and saying, this is the new plan. This is nowhere near the new plan. This is nowhere near what was presented. This should not be the new plan. And I'd like a response as to why it is the new plan when something else was presented. It's very confusing. And I think a lot of people actually bought into the old plan. And then somehow this is What? I don't know. I don't understand what it is. Is it a bait and switch? Is it a switcheroo plan? I'd like to get some clarity on that. And then I'd like to ask another question.
Appreciate the comments. I think the best way that I can respond to that is the Planning Act allows for property owners to make applications for revisions to plans as of right. And those plans can change based on planning policy of the day versus marketability versus just attempts to find a more efficient or effective lot fabric prior to construction occurring. I'm certainly not aware of any kind of attempt at deception that you're alluding to, perhaps. But I would say that the vast majority, in fact, of the plans of subdivision that I have been involved with in my 10 years have gone through at least one revision, if not two or three or five, or maybe not 10, that might be a bit extreme, but okay. Certainly revisions to draft approved and registered plans are very much a regular undertaking. And perhaps I can provide maybe a bit of a case study or a case example of that. Relatively recently, a number of applications, or one application specifically, has gone to the planning committee, whereby a plan of subdivision was approved, it was registered, and then it was draft approved again to change the lot fabric a number of decades ago. It was draft approved again to change that lot fabric about 5 years later, in the early 2000s. And very recently, we went to planning committee to again revise that draft plan approval. And that revision was very much based on both changes in the market and changes in the cost of doing development, which sometimes requires either increased density or revisions to lot fabric to accommodate, however the world has changed from a construction perspective or from a policy perspective or what have you. So certainly revisions to plans are regular occurrences, is what I'm getting at.
I'm going to interject here for just one moment. Excuse me, Patch. I'm going to ask for an extension of this meeting because we are now at 7:23. We have a lot of questions left. Not only are the questions many, but the answers are quite lengthy as well. So I would hopefully give as many residents the opportunity to ask their questions. So if you can, please confirm that we can go till 8 o'clock.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for that, Councillor. Yes. So my apologies, Patch. I believe you had
thank
a
you,
question.
You. No, it's good to hear that we can have revisions to the plan and that the policy statement from the province is also referencing things as to the well-being of the existing communities, and that they should be placed, or you could consider them as the community itself, but they should be placed forward other short-term concerns. That is in the Policy Act. Now, there's a lot of things in the OP about healthy communities. There's a lot of words about that. And in the upcoming review, there is a proposed strikeout of all of that. I wish everyone would take a look at the red line document for the OP coming up and to see that if that is struck out of the OP, then that takes out one of the legs of the community standing on the issues of better and more appropriate design that is healthy and that is supportive and life-affirming. And I can tell you straight up that this plan, as it is staring us in the face right now, and as it is going to be sitting in front of council, nowhere near has any kind of features that make it a plan for the ages, for the times, for the considerations, for the climate change mitigations, for all of the considerations that a community desires. So my question is, does Dalron want another community filled with unhappy people, or does he want to actually work with the community and figure out how we can redesign this plan? Because this plan is inappropriate and it's not integral. And it's also potentially not safe. Furthermore, there are technical issues with this plan that have not been addressed. The connection to Forestdale is fraught with technicalities that even Dalron, from what I've heard, hesitated to want to do because it is technically challenging and it could set up for liabilities because you have to build on a huge amount of backfill. This is a very sloped area. This whole area is very, very technically challenging. And we think that we, the community, have enough of a consultative capacity to help Dalron and to help the city make a plan that is much more amenable than this one. And we have to look at some things, stormwater management. We have to look at environmental assessments of what's going on here. What is the impact of this kind of a plan on the community and on that site fabric itself? And look at the excessive size of these lots proposed in this plan. Why? What, if you had just, or if Dalron had just looked at this plan and said, maybe we can do it a little bit better because we can put in not 175, 200 foot lots, but maybe a smaller, more manageable lot size, then we would have saved about the amount of space that we require for what we are asking. And you know what we're asking? Here's my second question. Are you aware of the community's response to this plan at the site re2021.com? Are you aware that the community finds great issues with this and that we have a petition of hundreds of people saying that this is an inappropriate plan with multiple issues and concerns? And we wonder, why is it that the city and the developer can't take a look at this plan with us together and redraft it? So this is our concern. And I'd like to really not get an answer, but I would like to get some action. I would like to see the change. And I would like to see plans like this go through a different process where we can make Sudbury much nicer, much more livable, much more appealing. You don't just want to slap down all these lots and roads and then have people come in and have an unsustainable design as a legacy there. Please consider shifting this plan northwards a bit and go to our site and see that there is room. In fact, on our site, we show this shifted with a full model of what this subdivision at this bottom southern part could look like, but also we've included some perception of some envisioning of a community that might be more livable, more acceptable, and something that might go into the future. But I'm speaking for a lot of people, so just let me just finish off by saying this. It's not a question, it's a concern, and it's a direction that we have to go in. So I'm asking council, are they ready to take the next step and move towards more livable, more integral, and also more appropriate developments? And this goes straight to the developers, and not just to Dalron, but to all of them, and to say who's going to step up and create a site, an interior site fabric that really, like Ron Arnold said, would be the basis for a community that everybody would enjoy. Look at his promises, green space, trails. This has no trails, has no green space. It's just, the green space that you've put on this is really rocks facing the hydro wires. But we have an existing trail that is beautiful and is appreciated by the community. Would not the developer want to actually, you know, maintain and preserve and integrate something like that if he knows that it's already of value to the community? I mean, where are we at in this day and age? Please answer.
So I appreciate those comments, Patch. I think there were a few questions and comments embedded in your discussion. In terms of whether or not we're cognizant of the concerns and directly the website that you had referred to, of course, absolutely, we are very cognizant and aware of both of those. Regarding the question of whether the developer is willing to work with and listen to the community to try to come to either solutions or revisions or what have you, I don't believe that we would be having this meeting tonight if the developer was not at least amenable to listening and considering.
Excellent.
In terms of the particulars around concerns around stormwater management, grades, and those sorts of considerations. Those conditions that I had spoken to you at the beginning of my presentation do exactly that. Conditions of draft plan approval are meant to address required studies, reports, analysis of stormwater management, of servicing, of capacity, of road design, et cetera, right? And there are certainly experts, professional engineers, that are very involved in designing the lot fabric that you see now on screen so that stormwater management, grading, and et cetera, actually work, and that they're made as safe as possible, and that they're in conformity, and that they're consistent with city guidelines and standards in terms of road grades, impacts of drainage, and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, those sorts of things are considered through the decision-making process and through the subsequent review of reports and other documents that are provided after draft plan approval, and certainly sometimes before draft plan approval. So I hope that provided a little bit of insight into some of those considerations that you had spoken to. And like I said, we're taking detailed notes, and we will bring the thoughts that you provided to the proponent, along with, of course, the discussion that can be found on that website. So I really appreciate you coming out tonight.
Let me just say one more thing to end that off, because
this is not... And if I could, as I had started at the beginning of this presentation, we are short on time. It is 7:30. If we have time at the end, I'm very happy to circle back to participants that may have further thoughts or questions, but I do want to make sure that I get to everybody, just in case anybody else puts up their hand between now and 8 o'clock. So if we have further time, then I'm very happy to come back to you, Patch. Thank you.
Okay.
Enz iPad, I see your hand is up again. I hope that you can hear me, and if you can just unmute. Yeah, great. You have the floor. Hopefully we can hear you. Oh dear. And unfortunately, we cannot hear you. So my apologies, N, I'll say we cannot hear you. Hopefully you can figure out that technology challenge, and I'll come back to you at the end. I see a Jan Bilani, I believe.
It's actually John. Jan's my boss.
Oh, okay. John, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. A couple of questions. First one's actually a comment, and it kind of piggybacks off of what Patch and what Don and his friend were talking about. I had actually thought about looking at going into the village of Montrose, and I actually saw that same brochure and that same map. Was that iteration ever approved? Because you've never mentioned that one.
No, it was not. It was never brought to a formal application.
Okay, the second thing...
That I'm aware of.
The second thing, and this was just something that I've sort of noticed over this past year, there was, from my understanding, a bit of a water pressure issue in the new developments, and now you're bringing in a lot more houses, and I'm curious if that's going to affect not only that area, but areas other than those.
A great question. Thank you for that, and kind of persuaded to what I was speaking to before in terms of the conditions of approval in response to Patch's questions. Conditions of approval certainly do deal with servicing and infrastructure. The city has guidelines and standards for the provision of potable water, which includes water pressure requirements. And I believe, I'm not a professional engineer, but if there's any kind of deficiency either identified for existing residents, or if there's an impact, I should say, to existing neighbors that may be, that would result from the new development that's proposed, then the developer is required to complete infrastructure upgrades that would mitigate the deficiency that's identified. And when I say deficiency, I mean if either water pressures or capacity for sewage or potable water are not within the requirements or the guidelines or standards that the city has, then the developer or the proponent must address those deficiencies through the engineering documents that are submitted to clear conditions.
Thank you.
Appreciate the question. And with that, I don't see any more hands up. Maybe I will just do a quick last call for any new participants if they want to make questions or comments before I open it up for any, like a second round of comments. So, let me know if I'm not seeing a hand. Ah, Kyle McCall, I see your hand up. Thank you for coming tonight.
So first, I want to say thank you, Kevin, and for your patience getting through every day. It's clearly not easy wading through the comments and the discussion here today. I think, generally speaking, from the group, what I'm hearing is that there would be an interest in understanding how flexible Dalron is when it comes to this development in terms of including new green space and working with the community. I think overall, that's what we would like to, we would appreciate, would be a little bit more consideration into, you know, how much green space is applied, how large are these lots going to be, do they need to be the size that they are, and a number of things associated with the safety. And I think that has come through strong and clear through a number of the comments and the discussions here. I'm just hoping that that continues to be captured in your notes and the comments. As others have said, you know, housing is clearly needed in the city, but the nature of what that housing looks like is up for debate. And I think that's what we'd like to spend a little bit more time chatting about. So I'll leave it there. And I just hope that Dalron is open to suggestions and flexible in terms of their plans.
I appreciate those comments. And again, I will reiterate, if Dalron was not open to considering, listening, and potentially, hopefully, or potentially doing further analysis to see if any further revision can be made, then we wouldn't be having this discussion tonight. Of course, I am not the proponent. I cannot make any promises in terms of revisions going forward from this meeting, but without this meeting, we wouldn't have heard all of these comments. So I appreciate those thoughts, Kyle. So I don't see any further hands up. Perhaps if anybody wants to have a second opportunity to provide any comments or questions, then I'm happy to take them. There we are. So I don't see any hands, so maybe Patch, I believe you had an additional question or comment.
Well, I appreciate that the developer is looking at potentially amending this plan again for the sake of the community's benefit. I know it is something that developers don't always want to do because in some ways they just want to do what they want to do. But I think it would be very appreciated, and it would be very, very, very much a clear message to council that development of Sudbury can evolve a little bit, that we can get more appropriate design in if the developer does take a little bit of a stand on this development in terms of making it more favorable to the community. So I do appreciate your comments reflecting that the developer is, the proponent is looking to make changes with community consult. And thank you, Kevin, for your time and for your considerations and time.
I appreciate that. I believe, Councillor, you have your hand up.
Yes, Kevin, thank you. Thank you. I would just like to clarify a few things. The community consultation came as a result of the community requesting a consultation with the developer, and we are very appreciative the developer invited you as the coordinator and, of course, the planner on this file to coordinate that. So we always appreciate having the opportunity. Virtually is not never as good as in person, as we have known in the past, which brings me to my next point. The frustration you're hearing here is the fact that the residents in this area, many of whom have been living here for 20, 30 years, are now moving either to Montrose Villages or new families are moving in due to the nature of the homes that are there. Many iterations of this subdivision have appeared at different times. These discussions have occurred on many occasions. One of the issues, and in the other iterations that you've seen, it's Forestdale should be a cul-de-sac at the bottom. It shouldn't go through. There are no sidewalks on that street, none. As far as green space, we have seen iterations where the north and the south of Parkland in the different versions of this have gone from the north to the south, to the south to the north. When there was an apartment building being considered at the entrance to Montrose, there was a green space being allotted, recognizing that the people that lived in the cul-de-sac were used to seeing green space. The developer is very has been amenable to changing designs in the past. They will listen to residents, I'm sure of that. And, you know, to say that we need housing, of course we need housing, but this is not going to be cheap housing. This is going to be, the duplexes now are going for probably $500,000 each. So that is the pretty well the nature of what's being proposed here. So I think there's an opportunity here to discuss further with the community. You've heard the concerns. They've heard many different, they have heard and they've seen many versions of this. So they are concerned. So I think an extra stamp, an extra consultation with the community, it's boding well. March 1st is supposedly when all the restrictions will be lifted. So perhaps we'll have an opportunity in March to meet in person. I would suggest Cedar Park Fieldhouse, which hopefully will be open at that time, to get an opportunity to maybe integrate what you've heard this evening. Have a look again at what you heard and integrate what you've heard. The reason you want to develop in this area and the developer wants to develop in this area is because this is a very, it's an area that is the envy of other areas.
Sought after.
Again, please.
I said it's a sauce.
It's a very sought after area. Yes. Because people take care of their properties. They maintain the value of their properties by their interest in the properties. And that is good for the developer. But it should also be good for the residents who've invested in this area. And that's what we would like to maintain, a balance. To say that the PPS is the only governing policy is not exactly accurate. The OP, of which I wanted to say, the OP and the transportation and Montrose will be discussed as one of the first community consultations as part of the OP consultation process. And that is expected to be at the end of May or June. So that is something that is going to occur. To say that the Dalron is... he's planning, the Dalron Corporation is planning along what is being proposed. True, the city does own an easement. True, council did pass a motion that Montrose will meander. And that was supported unanimously, with the exception of one or two. So these are all up for discussion. The motion is going to remain. It is in effect. It's entrenched in the transportation master plan. So that is just a means of making it work. We've had not an impact study, but an analysis, which has given three opinions. One, connected directly because that's the best way to go. Well, no, it's not. It does not reflect today's vision of what a community is. We have integrated complete streets, however. So those things have changed. The city has made some progress towards integrating a higher quality of life. They recognize that a direct highway going to Mailey Drive is going to negatively impact this neighborhood. That's without question. We know that. You just have to look around at the other connections that have been made. The proof is there. So let's think ahead. Let's invest in a community that everybody will love to continue living in and to fulfill the promises that were made in 2015. To the people who have invested over $500,000 per townhouse. So with that in mind, I would suggest that we have an in-person consultation. sometime in March. Hopefully the restrictions will be lifted. And we invite Dalron to please review this plan with what you've heard and come back to us. Work with the residents. There's an opportunity here. They will be your best salespeople because they'll say, this is a great neighborhood to live in. Look what we've got. And they will be your best salespeople for your area. So that's what I'm in. That's more or less what I wanted to say. I look forward to a future conversation about this. I think that it is warranted. And open to comments, Kevin, if you'd like, or to anybody else who'd like to add to that.
And so I certainly appreciate those words, Councillor. I couldn't agree more that discussion is certainly the basis for improving anything, whether it's the development proposal or a project that all of our respective works or what have you. Conversation does result in improvement generally. I will of course bring back your request for additional consultation to the proponent, and I'm sure that we'll have some discussions around that request. Whether or not something in person can happen or not, who knows these days, but like I said, that desire will certainly be made very, very clear to the proponent here. And in terms of the outline that you provided for, in terms of the discussion around Montrose and the meandering and the desire of the community, you're quite right. It's a very complex conversation that's gone through a lot of history. A lot of fingers are in the pot, you could say, in terms of opinion around which iteration would be the most appropriate, the direct connection or the meandering. So the point is very well taken, so I appreciate that again.
I will go a little further, if I may, Kevin, and I'll just expand a little bit on the meandering and part of the analysis that was proposed. And that's a report that's public, by the way, so if anyone would like it, just send me an email and I'll send it to them. The opinions are, one, Mailey is a direct connection, preferable. Meandering, not so good, because imagine that. It's going to lessen the traffic. Imagine that. Or no connection whatsoever, which is, it's not recommended. So the analysis actually proved our point, but just for added fact.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So it's 7:50. There are two hands up, and we of course committed to keeping this open until 8 o'clock. So I'm very happy to see your hand up, Aaron. You have the floor. I will of course ask you to stay as closely as possible to the 5 minutes, because there's two hands, and so I want to get to both of you.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you. I just have a quick question. The green space on the north adjacent to the corridor, is that just stormwater management?
It's that comprises the parkland that's required for 5% and stormwater management.
So an actual park space for a family?
It would be open space. As to whether or not that would be an active or passive city parcel, I couldn't speak to that.
Because stormwater management is usually fenced off, right, for safety?
Exactly, that's right. Yes.
So all of this would be fenced off, or part of it would be open?
I haven't actually seen the engineering reports for the stormwater management design. That's a good question. Actually, I'm very happy to bring that back to the proponent's engineers, get some certainty around that. And when I send the presentation to everyone that signed up for this link, I'm very happy to provide some confirmation on that.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Valerie McDonald, thank you for your hand up. You have the floor.
Hi, it's actually Everest here. Valerie is my wife and boss. I had two questions. The first actually parallels what Aaron had just said, which was respecting the two blocks that are set aside for stormwater and for parkland. My knowledge of the area tells me that some of these are kind of very rocky and unusable for actual parkland unless you want your child to die. My question is, the 5% that needs to be set aside for parkland, is there any requirement around that it actually be usable space, or could a cliff still be considered part of that 5% parkland? Mm-hmm. And is there a design that shows which part of this is going to be stormwater? I think, Aaron, you know, you already commented on that. But is there a design, or will there be design, that shows what portion of these lots are actually usable for humans?
Very good question. So I can only speak to that in a bit more higher level general terms. I can't speak to the discussions that have been had on the blocks 93 and 94 that are on the screen right now. But I do know that when a proponent proposes certain lands for parks, there are discussions with the city's Parks and Leisure Department, I believe it's called, whereby Parks and Leisure staff can speak to the appropriateness of those lands for park space, the ability of the city to use it as functional park space. So I would imagine that if you know, the lands were in fact not reasonable for parks purposes, that the city would not accept those blocks as being transferable into the city's ownership.
Right, okay. Do you expect to have a design for those two blocks to be made available to us residents prior to this going to for approval?
Could you speak to design? What you mean by design?
Well, part of it's going to be stormwater, part of it's going to be parks. But without knowing what's where, there's really no way for us to know where the actual park part of these blocks are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hope to get some more certainty around that question and the extent to which the design of the stormwater pond is solidified at this point. And again, I'm happy to provide some insight to that in the next couple of days.
Excellent, thank you. And the, secondly, I'd simply like to add my voice, so with Valerie, to the chorus of us requesting that Dalaran consider turning the end of Forestdale into cul-de-sac, as was previously discussed. From my layman eyes, it looks like it can be done without really losing any lots, so no loss of revenue from this project for Dalaran. But given the hills here in Forestdale and the lack of sidewalks, it's something that we're definitely hoping that Dalaran would consider. You had mentioned that it was really just continuing with the previously approved plan for the subdivision, but what I'm hoping will be considered is that since moving roads around is already being considered as part of this change, this would seem to be yet another road change. It's not like we're asking that roads be changed when they're not being proposed as part of this change.
Appreciate those comments, and I'll just reiterate the fact that things such or considerations like lot grading and internal connectivity are certainly things that are considered by both the proponent and staff when an application is submitted for review. I would say the ability to provide a cul-de-sac at the end of Forestdale may be a broader discussion than kind of what we're speaking to today. It might be more of a discussion around the appropriateness of the cul-de-sac, again, from an operational perspective, from a grading perspective, stormwater management, circulation. Roads and transportation may have questions, comments, concerns about turning that into a cul-de-sac rather than the thoroughfare. But absolutely, your comment and the other comments speaking to that cul-de-sac have been clearly noted.
If you, Kevin, aren't the right person for us to be making these requests to, as you're saying, it's you know, in part a city decision, or that they have concerns about that. If it's not you and it's not Dalaran, even though you are the folks that are putting this plan together, whom should we be bringing this request to for consideration?
Yeah, no, I wasn't trying to say that I'm not the individual that you should be bringing this to. We've made note of the comment, and I was more alluding to the fact that if the cul-de-sac was proposed, then I would imagine that additional discussion would be required with city staff in terms of the appropriateness and the design of that cul-de-sac. So just to say, really, even if the proponent were to propose a cul-de-sac, that does not mean that a cul-de-sac would in fact become the reality, because there are other technical considerations that have to be spoken to.
Understood, Kevin. I think you did a great job tonight. Thank you so much. I
appreciate that very much. Councillor, I do see your hand up. I'm just not sure if it just is a product of past or if you had more comments.
No, two things. To go back a little bit in history, I will recall Arvo. When Arvo and St. Andrew's School was redeveloped, There was a community discussion as of, and it included a cul-de-sac. Within that cul-de-sac, there was an area dedicated for snow load. So the 4x4s are up the hill anyways, getting rid of the snow in the cul-de-sac. So one more cul-de-sac isn't going to hurt anybody, believe me. The other thing I would say is that will you commit on behalf of the developer to having another community consultation with the revisions that of the concerns that you have heard this evening to come back to the community before you go to planning?
Unfortunately, a commitment such as that is beyond my responsibility and to be honest, my authority. Okay. The request will be brought back, though, absolutely.
Well, Christy may be hearing us this evening. If not, I will be making that request formally. I will make that formal request tomorrow by email.
Appreciate that. Thank you. So we are just at the cusp of 8 o'clock. I really appreciate everybody coming out tonight. Like I had said before, if the proponent was not interested in hearing the concerns and potentially going back, looking at the plan again, cognizant of the comments that have been made today, we would not be having this conversation. So it's my job, certainly as a professional planner, to ensure that all the perspectives are heard, considered, and looked at through the lens of the policy and planning framework that we are working within in the province of Ontario, and certainly public consultation, public input on development proposals is an important part of that framework. So again, I really appreciate you taking the time on a Wednesday evening, a rainy Wednesday evening, to have a conversation about a development in your neighborhood. You are certainly the experts, and I really appreciate the perspective that you as local experts have brought here today. And as I've said many times, your comments will be brought to the proponent.
On behalf of the community, I'd like to thank you, and we look forward to hearing back from Delron. Anyone else from the community would like to say some final words here?
I see your hand is up, Don, and you're on mute.
Mute?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, I just want to make sure that when you're talking about the cul-de-sac at the end of Forestdale, not everyone is in favor of having that done, of course. So just because someone on Forestdale would like to have that feature, we live in the village of Montrose. If you cut off that exit, all the 192 homes, over 500 cars, could only exit on Montrose after. So we're getting the brunt of all the traffic coming out. People living here are all in the 75 to 80, and it'll be very difficult for us to leave. There's 34 of us in this little complex. So I just want to make sure that when someone makes a comment, it doesn't mean that everyone's in favor of the comment. That's all I wanted to say.
I appreciate the comment, and I think that very much speaks to how complicated these kinds of conversations can be around, you know, iterations of design and all of the different perspectives that can come into that conversation. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
As I had said at the beginning of my presentation, also through the public notice that was sent to all of you, the notice that was mailed to all of you, the end of this conversation does not close the door on conversation. Certainly, you all have my contact information, my phone number, and my email address. If there have been things that you haven't been able to bring up in this public forum, or if you go to bed tonight and you think about the discussion that we've had and you have additional comments or questions or what have you, you know how to reach me. And I will, of course, commit to any comments or considerations that are brought forward to me after this meeting will also be brought forward to the proponent. So it is 8:01. Again, I want to thank everybody for taking the time tonight. And certainly look forward to additional discussion.
Thank you for that. I just thought of something before we shut it down. The comments that were made this evening, will you be providing some sort of minutes? Could I request that from you?
The comments that were made?
I mean, yeah. it's for the public that was here.
My concern with that is twofold. One, it is... certainly not the norm when it comes to information sessions such as this. And I would have concerns around my ability to capture the intent or the focus of each of the comments through my own words and text and writing, right? Writing can often be misinterpreted. It can be interpreted different ways depending on the audience. And I wouldn't want to either offend or provide any kind of uncertainty when it comes to comments. So,
this is being recorded, correct?
That's right. And in the absence of providing direct quotes pursuant to the recording, I'm not sure if I would be comfortable in summarizing the comments that have been made today. I think the participants are obviously very cognizant of the main issues that have been brought forward here. I'm sure that additional discussion will be had certainly at the planning committee table or at any future consultation session.
And actually, you bring up an interesting point, is that as part of this process, this is the community consultation, but there will also be at the public hearing, whenever this comes to planning, another opportunity for residents to chime in on exactly. Number one, you will be receiving a notification. Again, we are going to have an extended notification given the interest of this particular project. You will have another opportunity to voice your opinion, comment, write it down, send it to either planning. Please CC me on it so I'll know what's going on. And that's part of the process as well.
Took the words right out of my mouth for my final comments. Absolutely, there will be a public hearing that is required under the Planning Act. That will be another opportunity for you to provide comments directly to certainly city staff and council. And those comments that are made pursuant to a public hearing are made public, and council is certainly circulated those comments as well. So again, I really appreciate everybody's time, and I hope that this is not the last time that I get to have the pleasure of your company. Thank you again. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks a ton, Kevin.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Thank you for being here.